another good book, and turn to page 142, where you'll find Numbers chapter 13. As Pip said earlier, we're starting a new series on Joshua. In 2 weeks' time, we're going to be looking for about 8 to 10 weeks on the book of Joshua. But today's like a bit of a prologue. We're going to be looking at a story from the earlier life of Joshua. What do people know about Joshua? Okay, this is where you get to shout out answers.
Thank you.
Anyone? No? All right, I'll tell you what, let's all learn something together then. Right, Joshua was born a slave in Egypt. The Bible never says that Joshua was a slave in Egypt, because all of the Israelites were slaves. All of the Hebrews were slaves in Egypt. Now, Joshua was from the tribe of Ephraim. That was one of Joseph's two tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh. And at birth, his name wasn't Joshua. That's a name that was given to him later. His name was Hoshea. And Hoshea meant salvation. And surely his parents, when he was named at birth, born in a tribe of people who'd been slaves for hundreds of years, surely that name salvation was a prayer to God. Because these people were people who were slaves. They were not saved. Moses would later rename him Joshua. Joshua means Yahweh or Jehovah. God is our salvation. So that everyone would know where salvation comes from. Salvation comes from God. Joshua, his name, was God's promise to Israel. That Yahweh, Jehovah, God would be their salvation. And Joshua actually is the same name, has the same meaning as the name Jesus. Joshua is Hebrew. The name Jesus is Greek from Aramaic. Now, we don't know exactly how old Joshua was at this time, but from what we'll learn today, he's got to be at least 20. And the chapter today tells us he was a leader of the Israelites. We don't know what that means. It probably means that he was one of the tribal leaders of the tribe of Ephraim. Now, before today, we've already seen Joshua a couple of times in the story of the Exodus. He was the captain of the Israelites just after they escaped the Red Sea and they're attacked by the Amalekites. Joshua is the captain, the leader that goes out to lead the fighting against the Amalekites. And he's also Moses' assistant, servant, chap when Moses is up Mount Sinai. You can see that in Exodus 24, he's named a couple of times. But now today we'll see the adventures of Joshua the spy.
Ooh.
Now this story is set 2 years after the Israelites left Egypt.
Can I have my first map up, please?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. This is the route the Israelites took to... I haven't got a pointy stick, and I think it'd probably be wrong if I use that. So you see the route the Israelites took, and it took them about 3 months to get across there, across the Red Sea, to here at Mount Sinai. And they spent 11 months there. And in those 11 months, that's when God gave them the law. Obviously, they messed up by making the golden calf. But they spent 11 months at Mount Sinai, and then the best part of a year working their way from Sinai. You see where it says Kadesh? You see the wilderness of Paran?
Yeah.
And then north of that it says Kadesh Barnea. Yeah. Yay! Well done, son. And it took them 11 months there to get there. And at that point, this is where they are in the story. They are 10 miles from the promised land, taking 2 years to get there. And God says at this point, God says to Moses to send some people to explore the land. Now we're going to go through two chapters today. Normally, I'm a big fan of reading the whole passage, but two chapters is too much to read. So please keep it open, whatever page I said, because we are going to, page 142, because I'm going to dip in and out and read bits through today. So let's start at verse chapter 1. So the Lord said to Moses, send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I'm giving to the Israelites. From each ancestral tribe, send one of its leaders. So at the Lord's command, Moses sent them out from the desert of Paran. All of them were leaders of the Israelites. And there's only two names of note. Do you ever like it when you get the whole list of names in the Bible and then you hear someone to stumble over like the old Hebrew names? Not going to be doing that today. Only two names of note. From verse 6, from the tribe of Judah, send Caleb, son of Jephunneh. I hope everyone called him Jeff. Oi, Jeff, how's his son getting on? He's doing all right. He's gone into the spying business. From the tribe of Judah, send Caleb. And from the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, son of Nun. And from verse 16, we see that Moses gave Hoshea, son of Nun, the name Joshua. So we know it's the same Joshua that's named earlier on in the book. And when Moses gives the spies directions to see what the land is like, so verse 17, Moses sent them to explore Canaan. He said, go up through the Negev onto the hill country, see what the land is like and whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they walled, unwalled or fortified? How's the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees in it or not? Do your best to bring back some fruit from the land, because it was the season for the first ripe grapes. One of the instructions that Moses doesn't give these people is, when you come back, do you think we can actually do this? Why? Because God has already promised them they will take the land. Now, 400 years before this, God had said to Abraham, this is in Genesis, the whole land of Canaan, where you now reside as a foreigner, I will give you as an everlasting possession to you and your descendants after you, and I will be their God. However, more recently, probably just 3 years before this point, God had said to Moses at the burning bush, this is from Exodus chapter 3, the Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers. I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hands of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And the Israelites couldn't then say, actually, you know what, Moses didn't pass this on. Because about 4 verses later, God says to Moses, go assemble the elders of Israel and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, appeared to me and said, I have watched over you and seen what's been done to you in Egypt, and I have promised to bring you up out of your misery in Egypt and into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites and Jebusites, into a land flowing with milk and honey. And so we see here from God a twofold promise, that they would come up out of Egypt and be delivered safely into Canaan. God has promised that the nation of Israel would be brought safely into the promised land. And so for 40 days, these spies go and explore the land, from the south to the north and back again. Yeah, Will, can I have the second one up, please? Big map fans, I'm afraid this is your last one of the day, so do enjoy it. Right, and so from verse 21. So they went up and explored the land from the desert of Zin as far as Rehob towards Lebo Hamath. They went up through the Negev. That's this bit here. This is too big. You've given me too much. Up through the Negev, they came to Hebron, where the descendants of Anak lived. Now, Anak was believed to be like a big giant figure from Hebrew mythology. Now, in case you were wondering, Hebron had been built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. That's a nice, helpful verse. When they reached the valley of Eshcol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them, along with some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol because the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut off there. At the end of 40 days, they returned from exploring the land. As you see, they explored all of it right the way to the top, right the way back again, the whole promised land. They find a bunch of grapes that's so big it took two of them to carry it. These people, until 2 years before, had been slaves in Egypt. For the last 2 years, they have been nomads in the desert. And now they have seen this new land, this good promised land, everything that God had promised. It was a land flowing with milk and honey. So the spies come back and report. So verse 26. So they came back to Moses, Aaron, and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land into which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is the fruit. Up until this point, everything is going well. And then that one word completely changes the story. But. But the people who live there are powerful. Their cities are large. We even saw the descendants of Anak there once again. There were giants in the land. There were big guys in the land. Verse 31, we cannot attack these people. They are stronger than us. Verses 32 and 33, the people there are of great size. We look like grasshoppers in our own eyes. We seem like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we look the same to them. God had brought these people up out of Egypt, the world's foremost empire of the time. And how had he done it? When it seemed that time was getting tough, God miraculously intervened time and time again. The Israelites had already seen God's amazing power and provision. They escaped Egypt. God had helped them defeat the Amalekites. That's when Moses holds his hands up. Whenever his hands are held up, they're winning. Whenever his arms are down by his side, they're losing. So Moses finally has to get someone to hold his hands up. So they do win a battle. When they beat the Amalekites, 8 weeks before, they'd been slaves. These were guys who were fighting. You know, they weren't an army, yet God turned them into an army. God had provided water from the rock, and God had provided continually, constantly food in the desert in the form of manna and quail. And what's more, they had God's twofold promise, that they would get out of Egypt into the promised land. So where was their faith that God would deliver on his promise? Only two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, have faith that God will deliver them safely into the promised land. So verse 30, you've got to go back a bit. But then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it. Did Caleb and Joshua see something different to the other 10 guys when they were there? Did like the other 10 guys go and see the tough places? But Caleb and Joshua, actually, they only went and saw the good bits of the fruit. No, they saw the same things that the other guys did. They also saw the giants in the land. But for them, their God and his promise to Israel was greater than the giants. Humanly speaking, the Israelites could not have taken the promised land because it was too big. The guys there were tough, but then Israel was not backed by human power. God had promised and God would deliver. Surely Israel, actually as a united nation, there were a couple of million of them, would actually remember what God had done for them over the previous 2 years. But what happens? The people grumble and they rebel. So verse 2 from chapter 14. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole assembly said to them, if only we had died in Egypt or in this wilderness, why is the Lord bringing us into this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt? And they said to each other, we should choose a leader and go back to Egypt. We should go back to Egypt, where they had been slaves for 400 years, when they are 10 miles from the promised land. Joshua and Caleb try their best to talk sense. So from verse chapter 6. Joshua and Caleb, who were among those who explore the land, tore their clothes. They said to the entire Israelite assembly, the land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will devour them. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them. So what does God do? We're going to miss out a big chunk now where Moses and God have a discussion. But at the end of it, for their lack of faith, for treating God with contempt and refusing to believe in him, despite the many, many miracles they had witnessed, God passes judgment. So verse 22 from chapter 14. So the Lord replied, not one of those who saw my glory and the signs I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, but who disobeyed me and tested me 10 times, not one of them will ever see the land I promised on oath to their ancestors. Not one who has treated me with contempt will ever see it. But because my servant Caleb has a different spirit and follows me wholeheartedly, I will bring him into the land, and his descendants will inherit it. And from verse 29, in this wilderness your bodies will fall. every one of you 20 years old or more, who was counted in the census and who's grumbled against me. Not one of you will enter the land I swore with uplifted hand to make your home, except Caleb and Joshua. As for your children that you said would be taken as plunder, I will bring them in to enjoy the land you have rejected. But as for you, your bodies will fall in this wilderness. Your children will be shepherds here for 40 years, suffering for your unfaithfulness, until the last of your bodies lies in the wilderness. So God's punishment. The nation will see the promised land, but their entry into it will be delayed. There would be the death in the wilderness of the entire nation over 20, apart from Joshua and Caleb. Israel would spend the next 38 years at Kadesh, 10 miles from the promised land. Why? Because they refused to trust God's promise. And it's at this point that we'll pick up Joshua's story in a fortnight, nearly 40 years from this point. So what can we take from this passage? Well, when are we guilty like behaving like Israel? What are the situations? When are the situations when we face giants and all too easily forget the promises that we have in Christ? Something I heard when studying for this passage was that fear is, this is for the Christian, for the follower of Jesus Christ, fear is cultivated in the soul of unbelief. So fear blossoms when our faith falters. So for the follower of Jesus Christ, fear can grow when we forget the promises of God towards us and when we forget the faithfulness that God has already shown us. The 10 spies, when they went through Canaan, they magnified the obstacles. Everything became big, bigger than it was. But they minimized God's power. And so when they come back and report, the Canaanites had become the sons, the children of the descendants of Anak. They had become giants, these great figures of mythology. They then exaggerated their own standing before them. Oh, we're like grasshoppers when compared to them. Not once have they mentioned the fact that God has already brought them out of Egypt with miraculous powers, that he parted the Red Sea so they could actually escape Egypt into the desert. Not once have they mentioned that God has helped them defeat the Amalekites, that God has already sustained them with water from a miraculous place, with manna, a food that no one has ever seen before or since, to sustain them when they're in the desert. They're at this point, on the border of the promised land, their obstacles became insurmountable, and God's power and his promises were forgotten. God's promises became irrelevant to them. So when do we act like this, and what can we do to combat it? Well, I think certainly for me in my own life, that I act like this when I fear I'm losing control or I'm not in control, and frankly, when I don't trust God to lead my life for me. So when my options, or when our options, are faith or fear or faith, quite often, like Israel, we can choose the wrong option. So how can we combat it? Well, certainly for me, it's by reminding myself of God's promises towards me and his faithfulness in my life, and by holding fast onto these promises. I've got here some verses that Jesus, all of these are what Jesus spoke in the Gospels. These are all the words of Jesus, promises that we can hold on to. So from John 14, my Father's house has many rooms, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, so that you may also be where I am. From John 20, blessed are those who have not seen me and have yet believed. John 10, I will give them eternal life. They shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. Matthew 16, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not overcome it. Matthew 5, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. John 11, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Matthew 11, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. John 10, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy, but I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. And Matthew 28, surely I am with you always, even to the very end of the age. And as Moses would say to Joshua, 40 years from this point, when Israel is finally on the verge of crossing the Jordan into the promised land. From Deuteronomy 31, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified, for the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Just as God's twofold promise to Israel could be trusted that they would get out of Israel and into the promised land, so too can we trust God to keep the promises that we have wrapped up in Jesus. So don't trust your fears, but the Father, Son, and Spirit. And trust the promise that we have written in the name of Joshua and in Jesus too, that God is our salvation. As God should have been trusted by Israel to deliver them safely into Canaan, mightily defeating any giants that stood in their way, so too can we trust Jesus to lead us by the hand through life, facing whatever giants that we may see before us, safely to the end of the age, in the Father's house, that is glory. Cheers.